dude, did you fuck this bread? You fucked the shit out of this bread. You don't fuck bread, God.
I had me a fish.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? This is Sean.
And Sarah.
And welcome to My Future Husband's Face Fucked, Episode 3. So, we saw The Great Gatsby, and we saw it in 3D.
Woo!
So, we're gonna talk about that shortly. I guess there's a few other things. We saw Iron Man 3.
That was awesome.
Pretty good. Probably the best of the Marvel movies, I'd say.
I agree.
Yeah. Just right up front, I'm not gonna get into it, because it's too late.
Yeah.
If I wanted to get into it, I should have got into it last week. But anyways, yeah. it was fun.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought
worth of the price of admission, right?
Yeah, even though it's going up.
Yeah, even though ticket prices are going up around the country. Just so you know.
Yeah.
So you're aware.
Be ready.
Cost you a cool like $30 just to walk into a fucking movie. It's like going to the hospital. It's like getting admitted to the emergency room. It's like all these hidden fees.
Yeah, you just walk in. They're like,
they're like, oh, that'll be $200. Like, but I didn't even do it. I just filled out this clipboard. That'll be $200.
Oh, this isn't for services rendered? No, not yet.
No, not yet. No. This is just to be walking
in our space.
Just, yeah. This is basically renting that chair, that hard chair in the waiting room.
You'll be here for 4 hours.
Next to that bum. Oh, that bum. He's probably not gonna have to pay anything because we don't know where he is. We don't know where he lives. We have no billing address to bill. So we'll just
it
charge
says
the state.
The box.
Yeah. Like, underneath that tree. So I don't know, Sarah. So have you watched anything lately of that you'd like to recommend or that you thought was interesting? Anything you'd like to talk about before we get into The Great Gatsby?
No. I mean, I've just been watching like old shows on Netflix lately.
What have you been watching?
Like Cheers.
Oh yeah. You were watching some Cheers the other night.
I love Cheers.
Yeah, Cheers is not bad. I think Cheers holds up pretty well.
I'm glad it's on Netflix. The last time I rewatched it was right before we moved down here. I was at my grandma's house and they had it like on the on demand or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a revisit or whatever.
Yeah.
I watched so many seasons of Cheers. It was ridiculous. So, I was excited to see that. I was watching Adventure Time, as always.
Mm-hmm.
What else was I watching the other day? I rewatched Hell House last night.
Yeah, you watched that documentary. Hell House is a movie about, really kind of just, like, a really fundamentalist, like, hardcore evangelical Christian group that, like, speaking tongues the whole nine yards, and every year they do a haunted house. It's actually pretty famous, pretty popular.
Yeah, it got, like, the volume is ridiculous. There's, like, a cattle herd. Like,
it's, like, I think now they'll do, like, 5,000, 6,000 people will go through there.
And actually, it's spread across the nation now. It's not just that one Hell House. It's, like...
The franchise.
Yeah, they call it Hell House, and it's, like, you go in a room, and there's, like, an abortion happens.
Yeah, you see all these sins, and you see, like, somebody dying of AIDS because, you know, well,
you know. You know?
Living in sin.
The super AIDS.
Living in the queer sin.
Oh, my.
All the queer sins.
So,
stuff like that. It's an interesting documentary, though.
I think it's pretty, I like that it shows, like, not only, like, the process they go through of putting it together and all of that, but they go into depth with the actors, so you learn a little more about their backgrounds, like, how they got into that church, or, mm-hmm. like, what their day-to-day life's like.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, puts it in this, like, kind of neat context.
I think it invites you into the community, like, and it kind of does it, but I like what I liked about that documentary, and I appreciate when documentaries do this. There is no, I did not feel like there was an agenda. I never felt like the movie took a moral stance on anything. It was letting you just, like, kind of...
Make your own decision.
Make your own... Kind of see... Hear what they have to say, and then kind of experience things for that way. Because, I don't know. Like, however much I may disagree with people like that, like, I don't... It's not fair of me to... I don't know. Shit on their beliefs.
Yeah,
because I have my own beliefs, and I have my own things that I stand by, and, like, and so do they, and what are you gonna do? Like,
right. To each their own.
To a certain degree, yeah. I mean, and they're not... I mean, I guess you could make the argument whether or not they're hurting anybody or not. I don't know.
I think so, because at the end they do... I would make that argument, because they show at the end of the, you know, that you walk through the Hell House, and they have people sit down with you and talk to you about the Word of the Lord, and you can sign up and get information about the church and stuff.
Yeah, and you basically kind of get preached that and stuff like that, but that's... Whatever.
But
that's,
I did like,
people
too,
can
they,
keep walking.
They did even show, though, that they had people come to the Hell House and question it, and, like, the guy who runs it was taking the time...
Oh, to have, like,
talk
sit there
to
and
the,
talk to them,
talk
yeah.
to the Slipknot kids, yeah.
Well, it's fucking Slipknot kids, yeah. Those kids are serious business.
They're really just, representative. They're like, man, they're waiting and bleeding.
Well, basically, like, yeah. Man, he's waiting and bleeding, man. Wisconsin Death Trip.
That's a...
19-something or other. Album release. I don't know. I don't know anything about fucking Slipknot.
Wisconsin Death Trip. That was a great movie, actually.
No, but that's the name of their one of their albums.
That's terrible.
Wisconsin Death Trip.
Oh.
If I recall correctly.
I don't know.
I might be wrong. I could be very well be wrong. I don't know. I'm not, like, I don't know.
I just remember, Slipknot. I did watch their lead singer get a tattoo on one of those tattoo shows on Netflix and cry. So that was pretty... That's
true. It's very moving.
Yeah. I don't know.
First of all, number one, very moving.
Yes.
Just kidding.
No.
No, I mean, like, I don't know. Like, those kids, they're fucking just stupid teenagers and really have really much of anything, like, any depth or intellect to really say.
But so, it was like, still them kind of questioning things, and they weren't being, like, total dicks to the guy from the church. They were just, like, asking questions.
At that point, they weren't. They probably were, and that's why that guy was over there.
Yeah.
Because he had to go, like, stop, like...
Crowd control.
Basically. Yeah. Basically. I mean, well, let's be honest.
And I like that the kid that, like, eventually was, like, leading the conversation is like, I have to go smoke a cigarette, and just, like, walks off. And so the priest or pastor is just kind of standing there.
Or preacher. I don't even know if it was a pastor. Was it the pastor? I can't remember. It's been a few years since I watched
that. Yeah, I know. So that was a random find. Then I watched some other, like... And some, like, other, like, religious documentaries that they recommended, too. So.
Actually, I was watching one the other night that I thought was, kind of good. Or this morning, I was watching it.
Yeah, when you got
the
home.
Seeking Armageddon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's about people that, you know, basically preparing themselves for the rapture and what those people actually believe. The actual, like, ideology here, I guess. The actual belief. Mm-hmm. What it is. A lot of it, I had no idea. I think you'd be shocked, maybe even a little weirded out, how much money they give to the state of Israel. Like, however you feel about that, in general,
mm-hmm.
they give the state of Israel $75 million a year in donations.
Yeah,
they do telethons to raise money. The president of Israel records a video thanking them, because, like, they're of the belief that, like, well, like, Israel, like, we're gonna save Jewish people, we're going to convert them eventually, because they're going to be shown the way eventually, and that, like, ground zero for the end of the world is in Israel.
I mean, yeah, because they didn't learn that when we nailed the one Jew to the cross, you know?
I know, come on now. How many times I got to teach you this lesson?
Yeah.
Jew on Jew hate.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus was all about.
Self-hating
and
Jew.
And the Pharisees and all of them, they all hate Jews.
Self-hating Jew. Yeah.
Just so he's, like, classic... I wonder if Jesus was, like, the stereotype of a Jew. You know, like, you know, whenever you watch, like Curb Your Enthusiasm, and they're always like, I got issues, mother problem, issues with my mother, and I'm neurotic, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, my God, my mother.
I'm off a cliff.
Like, yeah. I wonder if Jesus was like that.
I don't know.
That's funny. That's funny to think about. Because he obviously did have mommy issues. He probably had some daddy issues, too. Obviously.
Joseph, you're not my father. You can't tell me what to do.
Yeah, you can't tell me what to do. You're not my dad.
My dad sees everything.
Yeah. I see you, Joseph. Please, Jesus, don't call me Joseph. Call me Dad.
You know, you're under my roof. I'm teaching you my trade.
Whatever, faggot! Because that's what Jesus would be like, a petulant child, and just say shit, like, mean, nasty things.
And then just smirk, because he knows he can get away with it.
Yeah.
Everything's be wiped
but,
away.
You know, but he's just like, Jesus, like, say if the biblical Jesus is the real, like, that was a real thing that happened, he'd be like, whatever, man, I'm gonna get nailed to a fucking cross in, like, a couple years. I'll come around, don't worry.
Yeah.
It's like, you give me until I'm 30, I start my public works, I go out there for 3 years, and I spread the word.
Or he would just always turn his water at dinner into wine. He's like, fuck it.
Fuck it, man.
No, yeah. All right, but yeah.
I'm sitting here, I'm going to get in my time machine and go, this is some fucking crash test dummies.
That is the second time today
I've mentioned crash test dummies. It's been on my mind. I don't know why.
Weird looking Canadians.
But anyways, I'd recommend that Seeking Armageddon. Also, I watched, I can't remember the fucking name of it. It was really good documentary. It's about this. If you look up the description, you'd find it online. there's this photographer girl. She kills herself when she's very young. It's about, and then it's about like her family dealing with the fallout and kind of like this girl's like biography to a certain degree.
Yeah, you were telling me about that. I was asleep when you watched that. Yeah, you said it was really good.
It was actually, it was very interesting, and you get to see what it takes to actually be a professional, quote unquote, working artist. Basically, you have to have rich parents.
Yeah, so that's why my major quickly changed from painting. Yeah.
Oh, because like they go into these tangents about like, well, not in a tangent. They talk about like there's a because like, you know, the father is kind of like this waspy looking like European dude.
Yes,
but an American. Yeah, I know. But, and his wife is Jewish, like very clearly Jewish. You just see the see the smile on this one. So, and he said, oh, my parents, they would never, like, have anything to do with my marriage and never would set foot in my house because I married a Jewish woman. But they financially supported them for, like, 25 years, even while they were having kids and stuff, so they could make pottery and have art installations and stuff.
Be hippie-dippies, right?
They're even hippie-dippies. They're kind of like...
Yuppie-duppies.
They're just, like, snobby, like, yuppies. Intellectuals.
Yuppies.
See, I don't think yuppies are snobby intellectuals. I think yuppie is somebody that, like, has the air. Like, puts off that that's what they are. But they're really not that.
Oh, really? I always thought like, yuppie was from, just, like...
Like, well, I guess you could say educated people from Connecticut that think they know everything.
Or a lot of the downtown Baltimore community.
Oh, it's for any city. I know. They all end up living in Connecticut, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's science.
Okay, so we're not going...
It's like a scientific fact. Like, most people, like, the old adage of, like, oh, you're gonna retire, you go to Florida. Like, if you're, like, a yuppie...
Go to Connecticut.
Yippy-dippy. You go to Connecticut. You retire in Connecticut. Like, oh, this is very pleasant here. Very quiet. There's still a lot of forest area.
I can hang my... These beautiful...
I can sit here and eat my granola and read my, like,
Make wind chimes.
Yeah, make... Yeah. Or that, or they just, like, I don't know, probably live some soul-sucking job, and this is how they hold on to things, and they listen to things like Susudio on repeat. Like, if Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, when he retires, or when he gets, like, you know, because he's going to retire, what, like, 45, you say? Like, that's, like... You know, say he's, like, this successful businessman.
He's the type of dude... He's tired of killing people.
He's the type of dude that would move to Connecticut.
Oh, that's... Ew.
Yeah. Or of his ilk. Or whatnot. I don't know why we're talking about this. But anyways, you should look up that description of what I just described. Not of the other things.
Yeah, you should.
The thing I described... Yeah. Learn something.
See what happens.
Learn something. Look up the word hippy-dippy in Connecticut and see what happens. Take you down a fucking...
I actually might do that on my phone right now.
A black tunnel of just hatred and pain and probably devil worshipping.
Or are you just...
Illuminati!
Or you'll just start creating artwork.
That's true.
Out of your pain.
My God is a son. you can find that if you can find it.
You're so good at describing things.
Also, I recently rewatched a fantastic movie called Kill List by director Ben Wheatley.
I love his stuff.
Ben Wheatley, he has another movie that I would check out too. It's a newer one. It's called Sightseers, which is like a dark comedy.
It was awesome.
Fantastic. Kill List, a really just weird movie.
I still like that.
It's a movie I think that benefits repeat viewings.
I watched it.
Yeah, it's kind of a genre bender. Like, it incorporates a lot what feels like different genres. Like,
and there's like subtleties in it too.
There's a lot of subtleties. I didn't like notice a lot until I watched it the second time. Actually, mm-hmm. Like it made more sense. The end of that movie does not come as such a complete like out of nowhere. I think as it did the first time.
Yeah, that was the first time I saw it. So
yeah,
I'll watch it again.
Yeah, but I would check out Kill List, Sightseers. He's also got a new movie coming out, and I think it's called Another English Field or something, and it's another. Takes place in, like, the 1800s, also involves the occult somehow. Like, it's going to be another genre movie.
Oh, sweet.
Sounds pretty interesting. But anyways, so now we're going to move on to our theater experience.
Yay.
Tonight, while we talk about The Great Gatsby 3D, the new Baz Luhrmann adaptation of The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. And Baz Luhrmann's famous for making very pretty-looking movies, like Moulin Rouge, and he did a Romeo and Juliet one with Leonardo DiCaprio. And,
The Red Curtain series.
What, Strictly Ballroom?
Strictly Ballroom, Moulin Rouge, and Romeo and Juliet.
Australia, which I never
saw. Australia was not part of the Red Curtain series.
Well, yeah, I know that.
But yeah, Australia, no, I didn't because I just heard it was fucking boring. I mean, we should try it. I don't know. But, which, I think it'd be interesting because it's about his homeland, so I'd really like to see, because that's kind of like, I'd be interested to see, like, his picturesque.
I mean, like, how many kangaroos can you really handle, though? You know what I'm saying?
But there is one Hugh Jackman.
And that's the thing about kangaroos, though, because you get one kangaroo, you're probably getting two, because they got another one in a pouch ready to throw at you.
Super. Do you know the baby
kangaroos? And they box!
Baby kangaroos aren't born in the pouch. They're born on the outside, and then they crawl up into the pouch.
Oh my god, like some kind of mutant creature.
Yeah, they're like really weird looking, and then they crawl up the pouch, like the outside of it, and then crawl in, and then they grow in the pouch. That's, the little Joeys.
You can't see the look on my face, but I'm pretty grossed out right now. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't need to know that.
Well, now you do.
Now I do.
No, but I would like to see it, but I have a feeling it's going to drag.
Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really interested when that movie first got announced and it first came out. Like, it had a bunch of production problems, and it was because Russell Crowe was going to be the star of it at one point.
And he started fighting things.
Yeah, and sailing around the world. And tug the boat. No, so I really wanted to say I was really super stoked for it.
Yeah.
And then it came out, and then I just kind of forgot about it. Like, I saw it at the store, I remember, one day, and I was like,
I think we saw it together too.
And I was pretty poor when it came out. And I was like, oh, I should buy that. Because I used to be, I'm really immature. And instead of buying food and stuff, I would just buy movies. And,
Wait, used to be.
Used to be, in quotes. but, like, so I saw it there, and I was just like, for some reason, as soon as I saw a preview for it, like, I lost all interest in it.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I would like to see now, though, like, I guess it's, like, to justify watching it, I think it'd be cool to see, like, I guess it's kind of, like, why I liked seeing Fellini's Roma. It was, like, his, like, I guess, like, weird, arty, like, take on growing up in Rome.
Yeah.
So I would hope that's what this Australia movie would be for Baz Luhrmann.
No, is, like, it's a sweeping romance adventure. That's what it is.
That sounds like Baz Luhrmann's life, though.
probably. Actually, well, I'm interested in seeing it now, which I guess is a good segue into actually... Well, no, wait. We're going to talk about trailers first. But anyways...
No, we can just talk about Gatsby.
Or we'll just talk about Gatsby, and maybe at the end we'll talk about a couple of the trailers we saw.
Keep the flow
going. A lot of the criticism lobbied against The Great Gatsby, the film.
Which I actually did not...
Not the Robert Redford one. The one we just watched with Leonardo
Mia
DiCaprio.
Farrow as Daisy. Beautiful.
Whatever, man.
I don't want to talk
about it. I only like my Mia Farrow when she's getting slapped around by Frank Sinatra or Carrie and Satan's Child.
Anyway.
Anyways. No, I know.
I
don't know. A lot of the same criticism that was lobbied against Australia was lobbied against Great Gatsby. It's like, if you look at Rotten Tomatoes, it's got about the same kind of score that Australia got.
It's
like mid-40s.
I actually purposely avoided anything this weekend about Gatsby.
It? Yeah.
Even like on like stupid sites like BuzzFeed, they would have like little things, and I tried my hardest not to.
Yeah.
No, because I...
Well, explain your history with like the Gatsby. Like,
with
F. Scott Fitzgerald. He's your favorite writer.
Yes. Okay. He's my favorite author.
So you're pretty excited about...
I was super excited. Yeah, like a modern adaptation of one of his books. You know, at least, you know, in my time. Yeah.
Well, I think it's important to make this distinction because you're somebody who knows the novel very well, mm-hmm. and I'm somebody that doesn't. Like, I read it in high school, and
I didn't remember much of it at all.
I didn't really remember much of it, actually. Which is, I mean, I remembered it then I would be like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And then...
Yeah, and it's funny, too, is, like, it's not my favorite Fitzgerald. I don't mind it, but it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But, no, I was super excited. I love his voice as an author, and so I was excited because he wrote a lot of his short stories and novels were... The time he was writing was when, like... Movies were, like, upsweeping.
Yeah.
So he tried his hardest, like... Well, he actually wrote his first novel to win over his wife. Because he was like, I will write this book and become rich. And that was the only way she would marry him.
Oh, wow.
Zelda. So, like, that's kind of, like... And that's kind of funny to see in comparison to the stories he writes. You know, even, like, Gatsby. And so, that's what his push all the time was to, like, either get published and sell a lot. Or sell his stories as, like, scripts. And things to Hollywood, which, if I'm correct, there are several versions of Gatsby even before the Redford one. I think there's like a silent film, like kind of like.
Is there a silent Gatsby?
There's a silent Gatsby. There's a couple versions of it, and then a couple of his other movies, like Tender is the Night, or books like Tender is the Night, made like a kind of like, it was like a subtle hit at first in the cinema, but didn't do too well. And Tender is the Night is actually a really good story. Again, about a tumultuous couple.
Yeah.
And it's all his. stories because he was a drunk that wrote about his crazy life.
Yeah.
Sort of indirectly, but...
But his movies, I mean, his books...
Yeah.
Lend themselves easily to the movies because it's... If I... Like, there are very, like, three-act structure.
Yeah.
They're written...
And they're very, like, detailed in the fact where you... At least how I feel about Fitzgerald. His voice is very smooth and flowing, but you get a very clear picture of at least, the setting. Even if it's, like, a brief description of, like, he's sitting in an archway. You kind of, like, he sets it to where you can see it in your head. Very well. So, and the other thing with him that's cool, too, which I was hoping Boz did in the movie. I don't think he did as well. We can talk about this in a minute. But, like, Fitzgerald was very good at using, like, music that was popular at the time in his stories to put people reading his stories, like, they could actually put themselves in that scene as well because it was a familiar sound because he was around the time also when the first, like, record players were, like, put out.
Yeah.
So music became portable.
Yes.
And so I was really, that was, like, something I hope, like, someone like Boz Luhrmann, who's very good at, like, setting scenes. Does. Yeah, that's what he does. Not so much in this movie, though.
He's, like, more of a music video director to a certain degree. Like, I mean, just the way, like...
Hype Williams.
His style and stuff. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it is, what it comes off as. Okay, I think the way we're going to do this, we're going to talk about the movie. We'll talk about it. We're going to do a non-spoiler section first.
Okay.
So for the first, like, however long we go, and then we'll warn people who haven't watched it. Whether or not they want to, like, listen to spoilers
about
it.
Turn
your
shit off now.
If you're not familiar with The Great Gatsby, I mean, a lot of people are. Most people read in high school. But, anyways, I don't want to...
Been like you and not paid attention.
No, I paid attention. I just didn't... It didn't leave a big impact on me. And I think a lot of that... Because I thought this movie, like, just my general opinion on it, it's fine. Like...
I liked it.
It was okay. I think...
It's not my favorite, but I liked it.
I think it has some actually really great performances. Like, it's probably one of my favorite Leonardo DiCaprio performances. I thought he was really good in it. He was really, really good in it.
Like I said to you earlier, like a fine wine.
Like a fine wine.
Merlot.
Just gets better with age. He does, actually. He's, like, one of those actors that gets much better
the older. It's funny, because even in the time we've been dating, your opinions on him have changed, I think, within the last couple of movies. I think, like...
No,
you liked him, but you said that you're very aware that it's, Leonardo DiCaprio, which you still might have been.
I still was.
But I think tonight it was a little bit different, like, than when, like, Django,
I think something like Great Gatsby is smart casting... Cast Leonardo DiCaprio because you already like him before you go into the movie. Same reason why I thought, like, casting Leonardo DiCaprio in Django Unchained as the villain is smart casting because I'm gonna be like him. Even though, and it works, like, against it. It's like a counter. It's like a double negative almost. Like, or not a double negative, but it works counter because, like,
when you
enjoy that character even though he's totally despicable.
Which is, those characters, sort of. Yeah, anyway.
But, like, and so I felt, like, for very, like, similar reasons, he was cast well in The Great Gatsby. Just because of who Gatsby the character is.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, overall, I thought it was okay.
The casting, I thought, was really well, though. I agree with you.
I think the casting was fantastic. I think it was, like, Joel Edgerton, the guy who plays Tom Buchanan, he was great. I've been a big fan of him for a couple years.
Yeah, I like him.
He's also another Australian actor.
Yeah, I don't know. Even though his accent in the movie sounded like a Massachusetts one from what I've experienced.
Yeah, well, it was like...
And then you're like, no, he's from Australia.
No, but I think like the... he was playing a stereotype, a gruff American.
Yeah,
gruff, rich American.
That went to Ivy League, and played polo. Yeah.
And he was a man's man, like, type of person.
Yeah,
like,
I get that. Yeah.
And, like, so it's a caricature more than a character.
Yeah, and I
think you say that about a lot of the characters in that story.
And that's with a lot of Fitzgerald's writing.
Yeah.
But no, I was telling you on the car on the way home, like, Carrie Mulligan, I think she was perfect, Daisy.
Yeah, she was pretty good.
And I don't know if I had to do a lot with, like, the cinematography and the lighting also with her, but she had this, like, just, like, wide-eyed glow about her the whole movie, and I thought it was just awesome. Like, I don't know, for at least what Daisy is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, the casting was really good.
But beyond the casting, like, the thing that, probably kind of deterred my enjoyment, it's because a lot of stories, just in general, are extremely derivative of The Great Gatsby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the, 80, 90 years since it was written.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're incredibly derivative of that story.
Yeah.
So you've seen that story, and nothing, like, even though, like, my memory was really fuzzy, like, I still was never surprised. I kind of knew what was going to happen.
Repeat the past.
Yeah, basically. I mean, like, I just thought, I don't know. Like, so it wasn't, like, very engaging on the story part of it for me.
Yeah.
I was more engaged in just, like, the actors and the cinematography, because it's got fantastic cinematography.
It was beautiful.
I think even going to see it in 3D is probably worth it.
Yeah.
I don't think our theater has the best 3D, like, projection.
No.
I don't think it does, because...
But... No, because I can move my head to the side and it doesn't bother me.
Oh, no, well, that's different, because
no,
that
I know.
IMAX.
That's
but...
a joke.
But, like,
No, it was still, I think... Again, like, it's, like, I made a joke on the way there, or the other day when we were talking about going to see it, like, how it was gonna be, like, a whole bunch of, like, spinning beads from dresses flying at you.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really anything like that.
No, it was just atmospheric.
Yeah, and, but in a very, like, I always use the word subtle, but it was super subtle, because, like, it even pulls you in from the beginning.
Yeah, it pulls you into the storybook,
like,
basically.
And it,
like...
makes things seem like, you know, it's, like, for the depth or whatever, and it, that adds to the grandeur of the whole, like...
I agree. No, I agree. I agree. It did. It,
and he did awesome stuff with the coloring, too. Like, and I don't mean just, like, normal Baz Luhrmann where it's like, pow, 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 like,
yeah.
all the time. Like,
well, it was actually probably one of more... I never, like I said, never saw Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But probably the most,
that's
like,
all sand-colored.
The most, like, subdued, like, editing and stuff-wise. Like, because, I mean, like, what I remember of Baz Luhrmann the most is Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge. And that stuff is, like, kinetic and it's fucking crazy. And, like, there's a lot of... crazy camera moves and stuff. This has that kind of stuff, like,
yeah, like the, like, really quick close zoom ins,
yeah, to, like, you know, to the cityscapes and whatnot. But yeah.
But it wasn't, yeah, I don't know, it wasn't like as, like, hyper, I guess,
hyper kinetic. It was not,
yeah.
it was more traditional, except for a few things where they used, like, kind of like, you know, with, they'll have, like, a talking head floating and then words, like, kind of floating around them. But Nick Carraway's, like, writing a story and stuff like that. So that was interesting.
Yeah, no, I like how a lot of that was put into play. I think it went very well.
But what's your biggest point of contention in general?
Music.
Yeah. I mean, as most people probably know, like, the Jay-Z and obviously Beyonce, because Jay-Z's gonna be involved in it.
Yeah.
They did songs for the movie. But they're separate from the actual score. There's a score, and the score is, like, kind of period.
It's period, really. Yeah.
But it's an update. It's kind of a contemporary version of ragtime music.
Yeah, but it's still, like, I didn't think about it. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, it worked really well.
Yeah, when that was happening.
Yeah.
But there were scenes where there was that. What was that? That was that one. The one, like, really popular Jay-Z song is, like, really apparent. It's not changed at all. It was in the one scene, the car. Like, when they're driving.
Yes. Yeah.
I for the life of me can't remember right now. And
I can't
actually,
I'm not mad about it. Yeah,
either.
I'm not very familiar with any
no,
of
No, but it was one of
like
his, like, first
titles.
Radio hits. Like,
okay.
Hard Knock Life or... No, it wasn't
no,
Hard Knock.
Was
no,
hard
whatever
life.
It was. I don't fucking care. But, like, I understand. So, like, what I was talking with you about was the fact that when you saw the previews that were getting you amped up for Gatsby before other movies, you know, it was, like, Carey Mulligan talking.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked to, like, the set director or costume designer.
Yeah, the
and
first
Boz.
Look.
Yeah, the first look. And she was saying how he wants to do, like, a period piece, but make it modern, which is, like, we were saying, it's Boz does that.
That's what he does.
He sets
things
in a time, but, like, updates it. I get that. I understand that, because you want to make it, like, so your audience can attach to it somehow, like, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, and my problem with it was, like, you'd be sitting there, and then all of a sudden, a blatant Jay-Z song was playing with some, like a second of saxophone, and then just, like, hard beats. And you'd be, like... And it would be, like... You would look at this... At least for me, it would just... It would... I would be so... I would get, like, really into the story, and, like, really into, like, how things were moving, and, like, you know... I was getting kind of overwhelmed at some points. Not in a bad way. I was just, like, being drawn into the movie.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you get, like, blasted with this, like, rap song. And it just kind of, like, stilted it for me. Because it's, like, it's not that, like, I necessarily hate hip-hop music, but it was not appropriate.
No, it didn't. If it stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, they did not mix. Even the mixing didn't even feel right.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, mixed really loud and kind of took center stage over, like, what anything else was going on.
Which should not be, because there was, like, lots of, like, big, pretty things happening.
But it felt like they just, like, dropped songs into the movie without any...
Drop that beat.
And without, like, trying to edit for the song or anything like that. You know, because when you add a song, you have a musical sequence... you know, you the way the camera moves and the way you edit and the way you do things, like, should kind of match the music. And it never, ever, any time that music was playing, with the exception of one time.
But it still bothered me.
But it still bothered you. They have a Crazy in Love, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
The Beyonce. Beyonce song. And she did, like, an oldie-fashioned, slowed-down version of the song. Like, that made it more, like, ragtimey.
Yeah, but then you didn't even notice it till I said something.
No, because I wasn't listening to, like...
But I do that shit. You know, I don't know. So that was my problem, was because then when I noticed, like, oh, crap, this is a Beyonce song. But, like, it's still, like, the words kind of worked, and, like, it worked a little bit better, but I still was, like, that stopped me for a minute, because I was just like, why is Beyonce in this
Well, I mean, it's kind of like...
Which is, like, maybe that's a fault on my part for not being able to kind of, like... Just take it for the message maybe he was trying to put with that song. With the same time,
but it's like
just
either,
very aware.
But it works or it doesn't.
It didn't.
I mean, like, something like, I think in Moulin Rouge, like, all that music worked.
Okay.
But all that music worked more because they built a movie around those songs and actually re-recorded all the stuff with the actors and stuff, made it like a musical to tell, like, a modernized fairy tale love story with contemporary love songs.
Yeah.
And so it worked in that instance. I think, like, even music usage in, like, something like Romeo and Juliet was, like, really effective. Like,
I mean, one of my favorite Radiohead songs.
They wrote it for that movie.
Yeah.
Exit Music for a Film. They wrote it for that soundtrack.
Yes.
But, like, yeah, so
and,
it just didn't work.
Love Fool.
Yeah, and Love Fool was also that. It just didn't work. Like, it really just...
No.
I don't understand, like, how he, as a filmmaker, like... You know, I understand, like, you're so close to stuff like that, and you've seen it, saw it, like, a billion times, you start losing objectivity, I guess, maybe.
But when was it ever a good idea?
I don't know, and that was the Jay-Z stuff was announced way after production.
Yeah, no, and I think what was
like,
funny...
it was not filmed with that stuff in mind.
Because we talked about this, it was funny, I think in one of the podcasts, actually, I talked about how we were talking about the music, and how in the one trailer we saw together, it had the rap music... I think for the trailer, it kind of worked.
No, they didn't. No, it had that, like, they had, like, three different songs. And one was that, like, slow, like, I don't know what you would call it kind of song. But they were all contemporary songs, right?
Yeah,
and
it worked. Because it was just, like, snippets.
Because you cut a trailer to it.
Right. But when it was in the... Because I even said, like, it didn't bother me in the trailer as much, you know,
you
whatever.
Can tell it's after the fact. You can tell they did not film those scenes thinking we're going to put a Jay-Z song here or Jay-Z song there.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what bothered me. And I think, I mean, to bring up a point, I was talking about Fitzgerald, too. Not to be, like, a book snob, but, like, you know, so that's what I meant by, like, I wish Boz would have, like, taken advantage of an author that used devices of the time, sort of, you know what I mean? Like, songs to impact that, like, fit the era because they're written in that era, but they still delivered messages.
Well, he's a man living in his time commenting on the time he was living in.
Yeah.
Like, that's what his books are.
Right, and so, like, I think it's kind of weird in a way to, like, kind of, like, well, I'm going to comment
well,
and
he
apply,
just
did, like...
I think that he should have, like, got, like, talent he wanted.
Yeah, but
and
had
then
them...
have them do contemporary versions of older songs, and then, like, so it still has that heart, so it still fits.
Yep.
You know, because you have the main melodies, and you have, like, kind of the main, like, cadences and beats, and then, but have it, you know, contemporize it, like, with, like, synth and shit like that. Like, that would have worked.
Oh, yeah, and be consistent. Yeah.
It would have been consistent, exactly.
Because
the score is ragtimey.
Yeah, ragtimey.
But it's contemporary.
Even with singing or just instrumental.
But it's contemporary,
like,
ragtime.
Yeah. But then, like, and then all of a sudden you got this, like... Yeah.
Then it'll just drop in a Jay-Z beat.
Jehovah
beat. And, like...
Yeah.
And,
well, yeah.
And then you're kind of like... It does immediately, like, abrupt and takes you out.
Do you know what's funny is while we're talking about, like, these, like, I guess, taking modern songs and applying it to get a feel for a time?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm thinking of that did it the best?
What?
BioShock Infinite.
BioShock Infinite, actually, yeah.
A video game.
For those of you that don't know what BioShock Infinite is, it's a game that came out a couple months ago, and it takes place in the 1920s, but they do, like, 1920s versions of...
Like, Tainted Love.
Of Tainted Love and stuff,
and
it works
God
awesome.
God only knows.
And
it's
works
beautiful, because it's, like, it's you have the sentiment of the words.
Well, you have, the Barbershop Quartet version of God Only Knows,
my
and then, like...
things ever.
It's really great. Like, it's really
great. Yeah, because you get the sentiments, and it's something, like, you... Yeah, like, you're kind of like, I guess the closest you got to that was that Beyonce song,
mm-hmm.
but it could have been a little bit better. But, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, that's how you do modern but also staying true to an era, like, you know, or like the past.
Yeah.
Old boy.
Yeah. Old sport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pardon. No, yeah. I don't know. So I guess that was the only thing, and I think the only reason that bothered me so much, because normally, like, scores can be shitty, but still be, like, a decent movie. It's just because, like, you were supposed to be lost in this world. You know what I mean?
Like he constantly rips you out of it.
And you just get...
He constantly reminds you that you're watching a movie.
Yeah, because, as you know, I mean, who's listening probably doesn't know, it's hard for me to hold my attention, like, for me to hold attention to things sometimes.
No.
Yes. I'm admitting it. No, and, like, for a change, like, I guess because it's something I was really interested in, but also I thought it was a decent movie, but, like, to be jolted out of that, I was just like, ah, and, like...
Yeah, I don't think it sinks the movie, and they actually just stop doing it outright after a certain point.
There's like, I don't know, more Jay-Z.
There's some, I'm kind of curious, like, if there was more intended subplot about, like, the racism stuff was more intended to be a stronger through line in that movie, and about, because, like,
it's not,
we can't talk about it right here, though. We can't, no. We gotta wait till the spoiler section get into that. But yeah. So that's in general. I think that's probably the end of our general
review. Yeah, I think so.
in general, like, I think it's fine. I think it's okay. I think it's, like, a beautiful looking film. I think it's got some really great performances.
Even
Baz Luhrmann shows up for a second or two.
I want to talk about that again in a second.
Weird eyebrows. but yeah, so I mean, that's my general opinion, and you obviously liked it a little bit more than I did.
Yeah. Because I think it.
Well, as a fan of the book, do you think, like, it does it justice?
Yes.
Like, for so fans of the book?
Yes, but I would like to talk about that more in the spoiler section.
Okay.
Then.
All right, everybody. Well, that's our general spoiler-free opinion.
That's our town hall meeting.
Now we're just going to get into just story specifics and themes and stuff like that we kind of sussed out. Anyways, so if you don't want to hear any spoilers, stop listening right now.
Do it.
Okay, you've had your time. You've been warned.
Yep.
Okay, so the first thing, what do you want to talk about?
Baz Luhrmann's quick cameo.
Yeah.
What did I say to you when he came on screen because of how he acted towards him?
No, I didn't.
Shut up, Baz Luhrmann.
Shut up, Baz Luhrmann. Stupid idiot.
Because he's just like a waiter.
Yeah, he's just like some like waiter on the side.
I just noticed that because, like, yeah, it was the eyebrows and the hair, and I was like, that's Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, that's Baz Luhrmann.
No, and I was
not
like,
a very good
and they like kind of, and they kind of like, you know, gets pushed to the side because, like, you know, in the scene, you know, whatever. And I was just like, shut up, Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, he's on screen for like 10 seconds.
I know, but he gets pushed to the side. Shut up, Baz Luhrmann.
Shut up, you fucking Australian. Go back to New Zealand, you New Zealanders.
So that was just the funny thing to bring up. But I don't know.
I want to talk about, like, what I was just talking about. As a
fan of the book?
The racism stuff?
Oh, the racism, okay.
No, I was just kind of curious, like, is that stronger in the book? I mean, because they're obviously making the juxtaposition, because once you get to the end, you find out Gatsby's real history.
Mm-hmm.
They're connecting him with the black community.
Yeah.
And, like, that, like, he's just, like, poor, trashy, and, like, these rich people are elitists that, like, look down on other, not only other races, but other classes. Like, there's a separation.
Yeah, but it's not, that's not the main.
Oh, no, I didn't say it was the main. I was just saying it's in there, and I feel like in the movie,
mm-hmm.
there was probably a stronger through line, because I think that'd be really easy for people to miss. Like, there's a scene when they're first going into the city.
Mm-hmm.
When they're first driving into the city.
Yes.
With Toby and Leonardo DiCaprio.
I forget their character name.
My friend, Toby Maguire. Nick Carraway and Gatsby are going to go have lunch in the city.
Yes.
And they're driving on the highway, and they pass a car full of partying black people.
With Jay-Z blaring.
With Jay-Z blaring out of their car as they're driving by with a white butler driver.
And they're making it. And
so that's,
you notice,
their, that's their
of all,
political statement.
But do you know what's funny, too?
What?
You know what I noticed about that car? The guy in there with the champagne bottle, the black gentleman.
Yeah?
Like, 80 gold chains.
Yeah.
Fucking retarded. Like, I'm sorry.
I know. Like,
super,
it was weird. It was, like, weird. I understand the points they were making. Like, I just felt that. I was like, that's really weird.
Maybe it was Baz Luhrmann, like, being like, us Australians, we have something on someone.
We're so progressive. No, like, I don't know, I just felt, it felt like a little race baity. in a weird way. Like,
yeah.
Because of the white driver, like, basically making a point, they actually cut to a close-up of him. Yeah. Like, kind of, like, I don't know. Yeah, like, ooh.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. So I thought it was just weird and out of place to a certain degree. I mean, I understand, like, you know, the larger theme of how they were connecting it to Gatsby, but...
I don't know. That really bothered me. Like, like I said earlier, I did try to avoid things. I think there's, like, one little, like, joke article I read, and the joke they made was, like, in The Great Gatsby, every time an African-American person is on the screen, Blair Jay-Z.
Gotta drop a beat.
Yeah, and that kind of held up. I kind of, like...
It's pretty true.
Because even when they have the, they go into, like, a speakeasy.
Yeah, and they go have lunch or whatever. There's black dancers.
Yeah, exotic entertainment, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
On several levels.
Yeah.
No, and they play, like, a hip-hop song, sort of, and it's like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
and those actresses were not dancing to that song.
No, do you notice the lip syncs never matched up?
No, they were singing something else.
That bothered me, too, because if you looked at, the first party, the girl singing on the piano.
No, it doesn't. It's not. I don't. It's not supposed to sync up. Like, I don't think.
But that bothered me because it's her. I know, but
I think it's weird that they actually bring it. They brought it to your attention that they have like the organ player. That's the what descendant of Beethoven.
Yes.
And he's playing.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear his organ come in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not part of the song. Like it just they'll just fade out the song and you'll hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, 20 seconds later, the song comes back up. Like, and people are dancing and being debaucherous and, like...
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's what it is. Every time that there's, like, a scene of, like, basically excess, debauchery, drinking too much, fornication... Yes.
What?
Putting P's and V's, people. Like, basically... Or D's and B's, I don't know.
Whatever. I mean, that the organ player.
Hey, now.
Or the photographer guy.
So, like, I don't...
Nick's artistic.
Oh, really?
So they're making a correlation, like, the success of hip-hop music or whatever is correlated, or, like, they draw a comparison between that and, like, lascivious living, I guess, fast and loose living. So, I don't know, like, maybe that's me reading too much into it or whatever. Or maybe that's accidental subtle racism. I don't think... I'm sure Baz Luhrmann is not a racist. I mean, he worked with Jay-Z. He's friend of the president. Come on, people.
Hoobah.
Yeah, like, all these black people up in his house.
I mean, yeah, there's even that great African-American actor in Romeo and Juliet, too. Mercutio?
Oh, yeah. He's got a French parent. He was his last name. He was in Oz and the Matrix sequels. Sorry, parent. But, yeah.
No. But I don't know.
I don't know. Do you think that was actually there, or is that me reading too much into it?
No, it was there.
Okay.
And, like, I you made a comment in the car that kind of has stuck out to me. Like, I kind of hope people get a little upset about it.
Yeah, I kind of hope somebody... If you're going to make a big deal about this shit, like, call it out when it's actually being done, not when it's... Whether this was intentional or not...
It's there. Very
obvious. Like, it's not, like... I'm not grasping at straws here. Like, it's there.
No, it's like, you know...
The first time a hip-hop song is played is when they're at, like, Tommy Cannon's apartment that he has for the... What's her name? Redhead girl. I don't remember her name. I know her real name, Isla Fisher. I don't know the novel very well.
Just
sorry.
Go.
What's her name?
Right now.
Oh. Yeah, so anyways, so there is the, you know, like, that's the first time it's played, and that's, like, you know, like...
Gertie.
The first time, Nick Carraway, or second time Nick Carraway's ever been drunk in his life, kind of...
That was super sweet.
It shoots him down the path that he's about to go on, like, kind of, like, shallow, simplistic, and then, you know, his character ends up being an alcoholic and depressed and, like, all fucked up. I was actually surprised there's no really happy ending for Nick Carraway in the movie, either.
There's no happy ending?
No.
There is.
What's his happy ending?
He wrote his great work.
Oh, he wrote The Great Gatsby? He still looked pretty bum. Bummed.
Welcome to the life of F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, so I noticed that as like just like a subtle thing that was in the movie, or not really subtle actually, but like, it was weird. A little out of place, I felt.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And it was those moments that jolted me out. I don't know, so.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know. So that was my, like, one thing I guess I wanted to bring up right away before I forgot it. That's really why I wanted to get it out.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I felt overall that it was really... As someone that likes the book and likes Fitzgerald, I think Fitzgerald would have been happy with it. I don't know. Like, that was something I thought about. I was like, you know, would this be a depiction he would want? You know, like...
Well, if I remember correctly, it's pretty faithful.
Yeah. No, it is. And I really love, like, you were talking earlier, before we got into this part of the discussion, like, you know, with, you know, Nick Carraway would be talking, and there would be, like, words coming out of the screen, and I thought that was really cool. Like, it set the story that, or the tone that it was still, like, a story being written and told.
Yeah, I thought...
You know, so you weren't just, like...
Well, is that the framing device in the book?
Eh.
That Nick Carraway's writing... Or is he just like, let me tell you a story?
Kind of, yeah.
Because, like, I think that's... I couldn't remember. Like, because I was like, oh, that's a really good framing device to have, like, a voiceover and, like, have...
Ewan McGregor again.
To have, like, kind of, yeah, actually. But to have perspective. Like, so it gives you the audience, like, so you can kind of do the book. Like, yeah. You can just straight up do the book if you do it that way. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty smart.
No, because that was what I said to you before we sat down. I said, I hope they keep a lot of the, like, dialogue from the book, or at least descriptions from the book, and they did. Like,
yeah, they did.
They carried the voice very well in the film. Like, I actually, you know, I told you I was, like, super excited to see how my favorite line from the book, actually one of my favorite parts of literature ever, is when Daisy's talking about her daughter. In the beginning, you know, mm-hmm. being a beautiful, you know, having a daughter and hoping she's a beautiful fool.
Yeah.
Like, that was awesome. I actually got kind of like,
yeah.
It was done very well. And then, you know, and then the whole ending line, which is actually the most attributed line to Fitzgerald. Unfortunately, it's not the best written thing he's ever done. But, like, yeah, it kept, like, the voice there. So.
Yeah.
I thought it did very good. That's why I was super excited about it. I guess from the, like, a fan of his work.
Yeah.
Get that green light, son.
It's actually a funny, like, flash game where you're just in a boat trying to get to the green light, but you can never get to it. You're Gatsby.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess they probably did enough with it. I didn't think they had enough, like, of Gatsby's, like, obsessiveness.
I think it was done... For the film, I think it was done well enough.
Yeah, I guess for the character they decided to... The way they decided to, like, represent him.
I think they relied more with this... The film, which I think worked really well, was they got... It was a good cast.
Yeah.
And so they could rely on, like, how Leo, like, looks at things. Or he just moves his face subtly sometimes. Like,
yeah.
Because he wasn't overly, like... He wasn't... Didn't overtly have to say, like, how obsessed he was with the way he presented things.
No, I know
that's what I'm saying. So, like, I think that was fine. Well, because, like, if you watched well enough, like, you could see sometimes how he would just be, like, kind of, like, manic, almost, for Daisy. Or, like, you know?
No, I know that, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that was a fine...
Well, I mean, like, I was thinking about just, like, the whole thing with, like, the green light and stuff, and, like, kind of that it's there, and then it goes away, and then it gets brought back up again, and, like...
I think that's fine, because I think it matched how, what Jay had to go through. How... He had that green light, and that's what got him...
Yeah, and then
to,
he gets
did
it.
All that seedy shit to get there, got yeah. it. Then he gets it, and the fog comes.
Yeah.
So the fog's there, because he's in a haze. He's with Daisy. Things are going to be how they are.
Yeah.
They will be this way forever.
But it's still actually over there.
But it's still over there.
Yeah.
I think that was done fine as well, because, like, yeah, if you think about the book or the story in that way, that's just how it goes. Is like, that's the, I guess, the visual representation of, like...
Of what's that?
Hope and attainment.
Yeah, and what he's going through.
Yeah, and so, and then, what's the last thing he says when he gets shot is Daisy.
He says, oh shit, I just got shot.
No, motherfucker!
Motherfucker! Ah, somebody drop a beat! And I ain't got no snare in my headphones! Oh shit, I'm fine. I'm fine, y'all.
I'll just brush my shoulder off.
No, but okay, so yeah.
He looks at the wound because he notices what happens. Says Daisy, and I think what they did really well in this was, like, he doesn't fucking look back to see who shot him. It was her husband for all he knows. Could have been Daisy. Could have been Nick.
Like, he doesn't shot in the heart.
No, but he doesn't, like...
It was too late.
Yeah. No, but I'm just saying, like, in that moment you're shot, what do you do? Like, usually in a movie... I don't know, I've never been shot.
He's about to give love a bad name. No, no, I know. I know.
No, yeah, but no, and I thought that was done really well, and then it ends on the green light.
Yeah, it does.
Because he stayed, looking forward, thinking that phone call was Daisy, which it wasn't.
It wasn't. It was Nick.
Right.
Yeah. But
Jay does not know that.
He's that. No, he's... No. So he gets to die thinking that she called.
Right. Basically. And then Daisy...
That's his happy ending. Because he's never going to get her. So he can still live in kind of just hopefulness or... Die hopeful or in oblivion, or oblivious to, like, reality.
He'll be up there in the stars with God. No, but, you know, I don't know. I thought that was, like, I think that was probably what hit me best was that ending whole sequence. I know you said the end kind of dragged for you, but that last
Not
bit...
Not those moments, like, what...
With, you know, saying the last lines and the last lines, like, coming up. Like, they actually type out the last line on the screen.
No,
while,
that's not the part of the thing that... It dragged a little bit. Like, it's probably more towards the end that it was dragging. Once he goes over for tea or lunch or whatever to the Buchanan place, like, then it was fine. Like, and then they go to the apartment, and then, you know, all the stuff that spurs on the end was very, like, you know, I was engaged. I think I tuned out. Not tuned
out.
I lost interest in when he's with Daisy, basically. Like, I just didn't care. Like, I was like, all right. Because I knew it was going to happen.
Sean hates true love.
Yeah. No, because I knew, I was, like, frustrated with the fact, I knew that she, like, even though I kind of forgot the ending, I forgot whether or not they got together or whatever.
Even when I made the joke?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No, dying in the water.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
No, I knew he died, but I didn't remember, like, the circumstances and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, so but I knew, like, while I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, she's never going to get together with him. She's never, that's why she's, like, she's basically dicking him around and just, like, having a vacation from her life. And I don't think she ever had any real intention of ever, and I think she shows that when they're having lunch and she won't do it at the house.
Do you think it's because she didn't actually...
And then maybe, or maybe she doesn't know, and then when she gets to the apartment... Like, when she sees, like, how crazy he is, maybe she's like, oh, fuck, I can't be with this guy. I don't even know this guy.
I think it's that, but also, too, like, I think in some, like, subtle way, she's afraid of Nick, too.
Afraid of Nick?
Yeah.
What he thinks of her?
Yeah, and it's just, like, everyone, I think it's, like, everyone's perception of her. Like, you know, I love my cousin, he's a kind guy, but, like, that, and then, like, my husband's this crazy guy who might, like, beat me, you know, because he does hit other women in the film. Like,
but it's
I think
also,
it's her like daunting also, fear of like perceptions, because if you notice, like, that's how she was raised as a debutante.
I know, but they also point out that, like, there is a line in the movie where he will not touch her. Tom Buchanan does not hit Daisy.
Yeah,
and that's like, but like, why would she give a shit what Nick thinks about her?
Because it's like her family.
She's cheating on her husband while Nick knows about it, and he's complicit in it. Why does she care what Nick thinks of her? Like, how much worse can you like going to run away from her fucking child and her husband, and Nick knows about it?
Because it's her family, and like kind of like it's ingrained in her, but also like, I think that's also like she says at one point, like, you know, you're the kindest one, kind of, like you're the most genuine kindest one. And I think, she's afraid, like, you know, whichever way else she goes in some way. Not she's going to end up romantically with Nick or anything, but,
no,
like, you know, but, you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of like she's, like, a kind person, and I don't fucking, yeah, I don't know. I just think that's just, and she's afraid of what her friends think, you know, please stay. You know, she always has people stay with her because she's too afraid of anything. Like, I don't know.
Oh, so I didn't really read it that way. I didn't read, like, her being afraid.
I think she's numb and complicit in her life and knows it's safe to stay with her husband in a way, but I think she's afraid, too, to, like, be... She can't be, like, Daisy. Like, she wants to be in
well,
that...
Well, no, there's the whole, like...
Go ahead.
No, continue.
No, so go ahead.
No, there's the whole thing about that she wouldn't even fucking marry Gatsby if he didn't have money. She's not a good person from the
get-go. None of them are good people.
But so she's like, and even when Gatsby has everything that she would have wanted to be able to, for the pretext to marry
him. Nothing suffices.
It doesn't matter because she doesn't love him. She's thought she loved him. She actually loves her husband. Like, that's the bitch of it, right? That's the whole thing about it. She doesn't actually love him. Am I wrong?
No, I guess not. I think it can go either way, though, if you think about it. Like, maybe she does, and she's just too afraid to, like, take a chance with, like...
Well, that's the thing. Well, I love you both.
Yeah.
And but that's not good enough for Gatsby. He's like, you have to completely deny him for me to, like, step in.
Well, because I think he kind of stayed true to her, like, in some way. You have to look at it from Gatsby, then. Because he... fought tooth and nail, or like even just got really shitty and then into shady shit to get everything he thought she wanted.
No, I don't think what he's
and he, I don't think he fucked around with anyone, you know what I mean? And he stayed with Daisy.
I don't think he's, I don't think he's in the wrong. I think she's wrong.
No, I know.
For that, I mean, like, I think it's completely reasonable for be like, I mean, like, no, in the context of this story, for him to be like, you have to fucking give that stuff up if you want to be with me, and you can't have it both.
Right. You can't love us both. You love me too?
Yeah, and it breaks his heart.
Sean, I love you too.
Poor Jay Gatsby.
Man can't catch a break. And then at the end, his one true loyal person besides Nick was his, that servant guy. And the servant guy was even like, oh, god damn.
It's like, fuck this honky.
Fuck Daisy. Oh, Daisy is a... Yeah, I don't know. Fitzgerald always writes very interesting women. Very, very interesting ladies.
Well, what makes them interesting?
Huh? No, because they...
I mean, you got to... Like, they have to... If they're not... Are they written any differently in the book than they are in the movie?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm saying they're... It's interesting, because, like, there's always... I don't know. I think it's with anyone. There's always just, like, fucking desperation. I just think it's interesting to, like, actually, like, see... Because, like, when you think of that era... You think of, like, the grand free spirits. Like, that's what you think, or at least me. That's
I don't. I think of the Depression and the stock market crash.
The stock market was good, though, in this. No, but, like, that's, I guess, generally, then, maybe, the historical view of the 20s. Yeah, you have the Depression, but, like, you think of flappers and, like, the free-willing, like, you know, wheeling, like, people, the, like, people who took, like, newfound corrupt money and, like, exploited it until they were, like, down to nothing again, you know, like, it's a common thing, you know, jazz era where it's just, like, you know, we do what we want and, you know, I don't know.
Well, in certain circles were like that. It was not society, I mean, for me, at large.
For me, that's what I think of, and it's always funny to me, at least with Fitzgerald, is, like, he kind of grounds that. It's like, no, it's fucking desperation everywhere, no matter how pretty you paint it.
I think, yeah, well, I mean, that's the way it comes off. It comes off as, like, pathetic to me.
Yeah.
In ways. In certain ways.
I didn't say it was...
No, I didn't say you did. Yeah. I'm just saying what I... That's what I... It comes off to me. Like, I don't look back at those times thinking about that stuff. I mean, like, even the jazz era, like, I think, if I think about it, like, oh, music of the time and the culture that surrounded that, yes. But, like, it's not indicative of, like, the entire societal, like, mindset of the time. It's, the way I look at it. I guess I just break it into categories.
Yeah. The Roaring Twenties.
Roaring Twenties.
Now, I thought it was awesome. I wish someone would take one of his other stories and make a movie, though. Like, an actual good movie.
I have a feeling this movie's not going to do super well.
Unfortunately, yeah, no.
Even though it's got Mr. Leonardo DiCaprio, I don't think he can save this one.
But, you know, it's funny. I think this is going to be one... Yeah, it's not going to do very well, but I think it should do decent, though.
I think it's sold as a movie that's much more exciting than it is. This is pretty straightforward. Like, pretty straightforward.
Just like the story. So all these people that are like, I party with Jay Gatsby and wearing those, like, shirts now or whatever. Yeah. I don't think they fucking know the book. Like,
they might not know. I mean, I think, like...
And they're going to see the movie and be really sad they spent, like, $25 on that shirt.
What I meant was, like, it's just, like, so many things are derivative of the Great Gatsby and a lot of, like, Fitzgerald stories that you can't really be surprised by that movie in, like, today's era. Like, you can't. If you're an avid, like, movie watcher or you just enjoy reading a lot of books or whatever, like, that's...
No, I know.
And if you've never read The Great Gatsby, it's probably going to be lost on you why that was important. I think that's why they make people read it in high school. It's yeah. because, like, that's... They think in, like, ninth grade you haven't, like, most kids haven't, you know, really delved into a lot of stuff yet, so... They want you to read it then, so you kind of get the baseline, the foundation for where a lot of that stuff comes from.
Yeah.
Storytelling methods and, like, archetypes and stuff. That are
they
used
should also read The Set of Paradise.
Yeah, and hopefully read other F. Scott. I think making kids read The Great Gatsby is, like, if you want to get them into that author, is the worst book to do it.
No, it is.
Because it's a fucking boring book. Like... I was bored to tears by that book when I was in high school.
It's like I said, not my favorite.
Because it's just very talky and, like, I don't know. Like, and it's just, like...
It's not some of his best character dynamics. Like, that's why I, like...
Probably not.
His first book, actually, was before... Great Gatsby was his first big hit, but The Side of Paradise was the first thing he ever wrote, and to me, it's awesome. It's about, like, a young teenager, like... fighting his way through, like, growing up in love.
It's like Catcher in the Rye?
Kind of a better. I didn't like Catcher in the Rye.
So you're crazy. No, I'm just kidding.
That's coming from someone who was always told they were, like, Holden Caulfield, and I was like, that. I feel like that's not a compliment.
Holden Caulfield? Holden Caulfield is just, like, he's just, like, that's just, like, the experience of being a fucking young kid.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna be honest, made it 5 pages into... Catching the Rye, and was like, I can't.
Oh,
and no. And I tried to, like, no, I tried, and I don't like how Salinger writes. I don't know. I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm more flowery.
No, to each
his
own, I guess. I mean, but Catching the Rye is another high school staple that a lot of times people
actually.
Read in high
I
school.
Was never assigned to read it in high school. I tried reading.
No,
it.
I was,
and that also might have been the flaw too. I didn't read it till I was in, like, actually, probably like 3 years ago.
I think that's a problem, because a lot of that stuff, even, like, some, like, really, like, substantial classics or important pieces of work.
Yeah.
Like, Notes from the Underground. The Dostoevsky. Like,
that's one of my favorite books.
Can't get into it. I can't get into it. Like, it's because I've already had those thoughts. I've already, in a weird way, like, it's not... It doesn't blow my mind or anything. Like, anything in there, I feel like it's like, oh, this is the most obvious, like, foregone conclusion shit I've read. In a weird way. Like, just so, like, I just can't, like, get into it. I mean, I'll finish it. It's short.
No, you won't.
But, like, I'm not enjoying it. Like, I'm not enjoying reading that book at all.
Because you are a toothache.
Like, I think some of the prose and stuff is fine, but the ideas in that book are, like...
Did you make it to the second half of the book?
I'm already past it.
Apropos?
No, I didn't make it to the second half of the book, no.
It changes voice.
I'm sure it does.
I don't know.
But the ideas in the book are no longer profound to me, because I've already, like, either read things or just have my own life experience and stuff that, like, makes those things less impactful on me. And we've had this discussion before. You read that when you were really young. So, like, it holds, there's, like, a lot of nostalgia in it.
It's, like, my third favorite book.
Yeah, but that's looking at it like as. But you're looking at it as a person that read it a long time ago. You have, like, attachments to it. You're not.
Yeah,
it shaped how I am now. Yeah, you can't look at it as an adult and look at that, like, objectively. Like, you can't ever see that for anything more than what it means to you.
True.
Like, in the same way that, like, there's, like, things that I've read in my past that I'm sure nobody. There's movies that I like that I'm sure nobody would like. Because I have, like, attachments to them.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know, which is why Fitzgerald is appropriate.
Yeah. No, but, like, that's... but just back to The Great Gatsby. I mean, that's kind of, like, it's a very rote story at this point in time.
I still think
if you take it out of the context of the fact of when it came out.
Yeah.
So I think, like, there's maybe, like, a lot of, like... And also, just people... I think as much as that movie tries to keep a snappy pace, I think it succeeds for the most part.
Yeah.
I think the pacing is pretty brisk. And
the pacing was good, and that's how it kept my attention. Yeah, because usually I'm like, I check out.
Yeah, because it's like, I think like the one from the 70s, the one with Robert Redford and stuff, is slow as fuck. That's like...
I like it, though.
It's an okay movie.
But you have to be like...
It's slow. You have to like that, probably like that.
Yeah, we watched, that was, we had to watch in eighth grade.
Yeah.
I read it, and I was just like...
Yeah.
I liked it, but it, yeah, I was like, I cannot sleep this period.
Yeah.
This film, I cannot sleep through. But, no, like, I think it's, I don't know, I liked it.
No, I know you did.
No.
I liked it, too. Like, very generally, like, I did enjoy it. Like, I would give, recommend it to people with, like, caveats, I guess, though. I would not blindly just be like, oh, this is, anybody should go see this movie, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like there's aspects of it that are very Baz Luhrmann-y. There's aspects of it that probably aren't Baz Luhrmann-y enough.
Hey, dudes that haven't read it, take a girl to see it. You'll get laid.
Probably not.
No.
Probably be asleep. No, I don't know. Like, it's just, I don't know.
It's a cheesy date movie, if anything.
Yeah, I guess it would be a good date movie in a weird way.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah. You can just take him to see Iron Man 3 like a respectable person.
Or the best date movie, which was Die Hard.
Die Hard 5.
Which was terrible. But the best Valentine's Day ever.
Yeah, Die Hard 5 is terrible.
No, anyway.
I mean, like, there's a, I don't know, there's an interesting, I guess, idea about just adaption and, like...
I think, yeah.
It's very much like a Baz Luhrmann adaption of something.
But I think...
But it's pretty faithful.
It's faithful, and I think he found his thing with Fitzgerald, maybe, in a weird way.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I don't...
More so than Shakespeare, to be honest. I fucking loved Romeo and Juliet, like, back in, like, elementary school when it came out.
What was your issue with, like, the way that story's
told? No, there's no issue. But I'm just saying, like, if you compare, like, how the story was told and presented, like, he did fine with Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah, because
and making it modern and like doing everything with it, and so I still like that movie.
I think that movie is good, but it's very cold, like it's mechanical.
Yes, but I think what I meant by what I just said was I think that he flowed well with like something like Fitzgerald, like
because I don't.
It's kind of like this, like.
Do you think he would be like good for other Fitzgerald adaptions?
Maybe.
Because I just think...
No, because... And that's what I was saying. It was like, because Fitzgerald was very good at implementing things from the time. And I think if Baz could, like, hone in things a little bit better and, like, squeeze it in, like, because, like, Gatsby, to me, is the most, like, super characteristic of, like, its era. Like, there's obvious, like, super crazy things happening and, like, extravagance. There's that and everything, but, it, like, his other stories, but it's not as crazy as Gatsby. Obvious big parties and things.
Well, I think...
Like, there are flappers and other stories,
I understand that, yeah.
So I think if, like, Baz could, like, hone things in, like, adapting music and, like, maybe that's the only thing. You know what I'm saying? Ah.
I'm talking about story.
No, stories, he could do it. Because they're all, like, these hopeless, lost, romantic things.
Yeah, but are they as, like, simple and... Like, Great Gatsby's fucking, like, it's fucking ABC. Like,
yes.
It's super simple.
No, they're all like that.
And, like, there is no confusion about how people feel, because they literally fucking tell you. Like,
no, that's Tender as the Night.
And I think he gets...
The offshore pirate would be fucking...
He got to
cool.
do a much straighter up adaptation than... Just like Shakespeare. They just, you know, changed the setting, but they're saying the same words, the same scenes, like, it's
same
not...
Same thing he did with Gatsby.
Yeah, it looks like very
no,
much
and
so
you
the
could
same
do that
case
even,
with Gatsby.
You could even do that with... One of his short stories, Offshore Pirate, I think Baz Luhrmann would do very good with.
And just do it in outer space.
Yeah. Like Gravity.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have much else to say about it, unless you do.
No.
No?
No.
No.
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know, right at the tail end here, we saw a couple trailers. You should probably do these first, but we don't. I got a couple trailers. I guess maybe say some wordage on.
Captain Phillips.
A.K.A. Tom Hanks is Captain Phillips. It's his,
Tom Hanks gonna take down some pirates.
Based on the thing that happened about a year ago, mm-hmm. a little over a year ago, the Somali pirates taking over that cargo vessel in the water.
But it's Tom motherfucking Hanks.
But Tom Hanks plays the captain of the ship,
Captain Phillips.
Which, I don't like that name. Like, why? No, but why name the movie Captain Phillips?
Because that pirate claims he's captain now.
Yeah. Look at me.
Look at me. I'm the
king. Actually, the guy playing the Somali Pirates looks like they're selling it pretty well.
Yeah, I'm going to go see it.
Yeah, actually, it doesn't look bad. Paul Greengrass directed it. The guy directed the latter two of the Matt Damon, Jason Bourne movies. Which I like those movies. I think they're fine.
I've never seen any of the Bourne.
They're thrillers. They're just thrillers.
Well, really? I just like Tom Hanks, so.
And I love Tom Hanks, yeah. So I will watch it.
We'll go.
I will definitely check that one out. It looks pretty. It doesn't look bad. It looks okay, and it's an interesting story. And like, I'm okay with like something like that being embellished a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, pirates. I think Zero Dark Thirty is, like, kind of egregious and disgusting. Yeah. Because, like, you're putting, like, making up, like, what happened and, like, and then claiming it's true and, like, weird embellishments and the use of torture and stuff. But, like, a good, hopeful story about this guy who gets attacked by pirates and then has to bring him and his crew together to save the day. If you make him look a little cooler than he actually was, I'm fine with that.
Turn your fire hoses on.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Central. But yeah, doesn't look bad. I'm actually kind of looking forward to that.
And then the other one I wanted to talk about was a movie I had no idea about.
I actually watched the trailer right before we went to see the movie, actually.
That's weird.
Yeah.
It scared the crap out of me.
Gravity. Alfonso Cuarón. You Too, Mama Bien.
Y Tu Mama También.
Y Tu, whatever, which she said.
Y Tu Mama También.
He directed that. He directed Children of Men. He directed Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, which is actually one of the best ones.
I've only seen the first of the last two. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
how the last
.
Ones, yeah.
In two parts.
That's the only Harry Potter. Oh, I saw one, like, a little, like, couple
Harry
months
Harry Potter's all right. But anyways, he directed that. Children of Men is actually one of my, like, I really enjoy.
Children of Men's good.
Love Children of Men. And I've been really looking forward to this movie for a while. So, it had a lot of troubles. Like, Robert Downey Jr. and Angelina Jolie were supposed to be the cast at one point. And then they dropped out.
And they picked America's Sweethearts.
And then we got Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. But this movie is supposed to be really. It's basically like a one-woman show. Like, it's basically just going to be Sandra Bullock, the movie.
In a spacesuit.
It's going to be awesome. I don't know.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, you love Sandy Bullock.
Sandy Bullock's all right.
Why don't you marry her?
I don't mind.
Her?
She's like not.
Why don't you marry her?
She's not annoying. She doesn't answer my letters. But, like, she's not annoying. Like, I.
No,
like,
I don't think
of she, all the,
except for The Blind Side.
Those, like. God forbid we tell a true story.
Anyway.
But anyways, no, I don't think she should have won the Academy Award for it, but I could care less if she fucking made The Blind Side.
Grow up in a house of Ravens fans and have to watch it 10 times in a year.
Well, that's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
That is horrible.
Every time you walk into your mom's
house.
You've
never even seen the whole thing.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
I have a feeling you haven't.
No,
I have.
I
have a feeling I'm being lied to, America.
I have.
Have you? You've seen the
whole
thing?
Yes.
Okay. I watched it one time. That was enough.
Yeah, no, but when you, like, go visit your mom, it's playing every time
She's
you walk
She's like,
in
have her. You seen The Blind Side?
Yeah. It's great.
It's a fantastic movie.
Anyway.
But
no, Gravity, like, the trailer scares me because space is scary.
Well, you know what I like about the trailer? It gives nothing away about what that movie's going to be about, other than, like, a basic conceit.
Yeah.
Of, like, something bad happens and maybe she's, like, off, lost in space.
That's what I was hoping. I was like, oh, this will be Lost in Space.
Lost in Space 2. Yes, they're finally making the sequel. Gary Oldman, come
danger,
back.
Danger, danger.
Yeah. Spiders? Fucking, I own that on Blu-ray.
Can we watch it when we're done
this? Yeah, we can, actually. It looks good. I like the trailer. It gives nothing away about what it's about, and it's kind of like, it just, you know, something horrible happens, and some mishap goes, but it kind of gives you just, like, the tone, and that's, like, one of those things that also, like, I think it's just, like, a natural human thing of being afraid. I think being lost in any type of sense of being lost.
No.
Like, imagine, like, being lost. It's, like.
Space is fucking terrifying.
And being, like, lost in space,
like,
is not good either. Not the show, but.
Yeah.
No, I mean, just the idea of, like, floating and then, like, barely being. There's a great, like, little clip where she's, like, reaching, trying to grab this, like, this
solar
bar.
Panel.
Oh, the solar panel, but when she's right at the edge of, like, this, like, satellite, and she's trying to grab, like, this bar to anchor herself back to the satellite, and she's just, like, an inch out of reach, and she can't get it, and there's nothing you can do because you're fucking no gravity and you're in space.
Zero.
Horrible. It'd be terrible.
No, that's why space is terrifying.
Yeah, that's actually probably one of my favorite parts of what's it called? Apollo 13. Is the dream sequence when he gets blasted out of the thing?
Yeah,
that kind of creeps me out. Freaks me out.
No, I mean, I was a youth that grew up in Florida and had to go to NASA all the time and like watch space movies and like be around the rockets and the launch pads. And I used to like have like almost panic attacks like thinking about going into space because it's fucking scary.
Yeah, it is.
So like that when I saw that trailer, I was like, that is terrifying. Like honestly, like. Things popping out, that's one kind of jumpy, scary, or like, you know.
No, I think it's going to be like.
No. But
situational scary, you know.
That's what I was trying to say, yeah. Was like, yeah, things popping out, or like gore, I'll like watch gore to a point, but like, space scary is scary, yeah. Like, no one can hear you scream.
Well, I think that's a good line to know. In space, no one can hear you scream is a fantastic line that we made up, and yep. That's how we're going to end it.
Boom.
So don't even bother trying to scream in space. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.